And it's just gone 9 minutes past 12 o'clock. Good afternoon from me, Ray White, in from Kalani Gwala. Now the XG Show, live from the proudly South African Buy Local Summit and Expo in Sandton. We've had a great time so far today. Coming up on the program in the next hour, taking a closer look at local industry, also finding out if South Africans are supporting each other in buying South African products. And that's the big thing. Since I got here about 3 hours ago, I've been walking around, and all sorts of local vendors, they've seen the 702 t-shirt. They said, hey, let's chat to you. Let's talk about this. We are here today to promote local business. We are here today to make sure that you get the exposure that you need. That's the big thing. So this is an interesting expo as it deals with supply chain, also tapping into various markets as well, also taking a closer look at industries such as textiles, tourism, overall small business. If you are here, come on down to the 702E, not a booth, we're actually just sitting at a table. On the one hand, we've got Coca-Cola. On the other hand, we've got Edgar's. But those are the big guys. We're looking at the small businesses today. And I think what I'm loving so much about this is the fact that the small businesses are tucked in between the bigger ones as well. It's sort of like giving the bigger ones, giving the smaller ones a helping hand. And that's the big thing. If you think about it, 27% of our workforce unemployed at the moment, millions of people looking for jobs. And the only way to do this is to give exposure to small business. So if you have a small business and you're listening to this radio show this afternoon on Cape Talk and 702, give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. You can also SMS us, 31702 or 31567. Coming to you live from the proudly South African Buy Local Summit. And like I said, unemployment is a major problem in our country with various initiatives underway to make sure that local industry grows. The concept, of course, today, buy local, promote local industry, promote job creation as well. Joining us is a proudly South African CEO, Eustace Mashambiye. Eustace, great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Ray.
Now, how do you, as proudly South Africa, then advance small business? Because, like I said in my introduction, it's all about small business. We know what we've got. I can see Coca-Cola. We know them very well. Mm. What about the small guys? What are you doing to promote them?
So the thinking behind having this day specifically focused on SMMEs is so that the likes of Coca-Cola can showcase the work they're doing to support SMMEs. So they have exciting enterprise and supplier development programs where they've brought with them SMMEs. So if you look behind each of these stands for each of these big brands, there are pavilions of SMMEs that are part of their programs, SMMEs that are part of the Proudly South African campaign. Because with us, we sign up companies that make their products locally and that are of a high-quality nature, and we open up markets for them. So the role of Proudly South African in this instance is to provide access to market opportunities. So today we have buyers coming from all over the country, whether in the private sector or from the public sector. We have consumers walking in, and that's why this expo is held at street level in the Sandton Convention Center, so that ordinary consumers can come and buy from these businesses. And that is the thinking behind today.
Eustace, one of the things that worries many is that you have the big guys who are here. And I'm not pointing fingers to any of the people we're sitting next to, but very often there's bullying as well. You'll have a convention like we have today, which is a good thing. But then behind the scenes, the little guys totally shut out. How do you prevent that from happening?
So one of the things that companies battle with the most is access to markets. So we have to make sure that these guys can compete by opening up markets for them. One of the things that we've done as Proudly South African is we've developed an online shopping platform as an example. These guys are battling to get retail space because retailers want them to have money for promotions and budgets for them to promote their companies and their products because they're new. And when consumers walk into retail spaces, they might not necessarily buy them because they don't know them. So the online shop gives you an opportunity to can put your product out there at no cost. As a member of Proudly South African, you have access to those kind of platforms. So what we're saying is that let's fight for SMMEs by giving them platforms. Let's give them opportunities. We have a database of locally made products and services that we send out to the private sector. We get requests daily to say, I'm looking for companies that make furniture locally. We send it to those guys. So it's about making sure that we break down those doors that SMMEs battle to break down as Proudly South African, keeping in mind the fact that there's high levels of unemployment and something has to be done.
One of the big things as well, though, it's great that you have this today. Are South Africans patriotic enough? Are they actually buying South African? When they go into the shops, they see that sticker. Are you finding that products are being sold more?
So we are finding that as you make them available, one of the four key pillars that we have as Proudly South African in terms of our focus areas is promoting accessibility of locally made products. The biggest challenge is that when you walk into retail spaces, you need to be in a position where you can easily identify the products. So what we're doing is we're talking to retailers. If you look to your right, you'll see Edgar's showcasing what is locally made. So we just need to drive that message to South Africans to say, go into the spaces, you'll find them. Look at social media. If you look at the middle class, look at social media. There is a revolution in this country where people are saying, we want to buy local. People are constantly sharing products that are locally made, saying, I've discovered this manufacturer here, I've discovered this product there. But what we're looking to do with Proudly South African is find a place where we can house all of these products. And this expo seeks to showcase the fact that we've housed 1,500 companies' products to date. And we have more than 9,000 products in our books, products made by SMMEs and big business. So finally, there's a place where people can go, and they know that if they go into the Proudly SA website, if they go into the rsamade.co.za online shop, they will find the products. And I think it was just a matter of making sure that the products are accessible.
Finding those products, also, how can people become more involved if they're listening to this radio interview? Mm. Can they come down here? Maybe it's too late for this one, or is it? How do they get involved in the next one?
So it's not too late. It's too late to exhibit. The exhibition stands up. The expo runs over the two-day period. So people can still come in today. The expo runs until 6 o'clock tonight. And people can come in tomorrow. So go on to buylocalsummit.co.za. You know, if you go into other expos, you know you have to pay. Here it's free to attend. You just need to register yourself on buylocalsummit.co.za to attend the expo. And the conference is unfortunately full and oversubscribed. Mm-hmm. But as people come in for the expo and a space becomes available in the summit side or in the conference side, we will allow people to go into the conference.
That sounds good. Proudly South African CEO Eustace Mashambiya, great to have you.
Thank you, Ray.
On the program this afternoon.
Thank you.
19 minutes past 12 o'clock, coming to you live from the Sandton Convention Center for the Proudly South African Buy Local Summit meeting. Now, while initiatives such as Proudly South African are good drivers for growth, government also has a role to play as well. President Cyril Ramaphosa calling for $500 billion in investment within 5 years. That's coming from outside. So what's happening from inside? And that's where we get to talk to Small Business Deputy Minister, Small Business Department Deputy Minister Castle Matale. Deputy Minister, welcome to 702.
Thank you, and good day to the listeners of 702.
Now, the last time we spoke, you won't remember, it was many years ago, you were a premier of a certain province.
Limpopo.
Correct. Small business, it's a whole new ballgame.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very challenging, very interesting, and very critical and important to the growth of our economy, to resolve the challenges that we have of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. This is a vehicle through which we can make a dent to this challenge facing our country.
It's so worrying, Deputy Minister, when you hear of so many people being unemployed. It's a huge challenge for government. Your department, what are you doing to promote small business? I have a whole lot of people, as soon as I step through the door today, hungry for help. What are you guys doing?
We provide educational support through CEDA, which is an agency that reports. It's under the Department of Small Business Development, which provide non-financial support. But ourselves also, as political heads of the department in particular, we do engage in what I might call public education program, where we go to communities to explain to them what the Department of Small Business is about and how they can go about to register businesses, to start their own businesses, or to improve on what they are doing. But of course, what one has observed, and I think everybody understands, is that the issue of small business development is not a Department of Small Business responsibility alone, but it's a government responsibility. You go to science and technology, there's small business there. You go to agriculture, there is small business there. You go to Department of Trade and Industry. In fact, even up to now, they still do certain things that has to do with small business development, education, health. But there is no department that you can talk of which does that have nothing to do with small businesses. Like you also go into the private sector. And this morning we met APSA. They have got enterprise development program. So small business is a business of everybody, and including ourselves. Our role is to coordinate and lobby and interact with those who are in the space to ensure that small business people get help. And in South Africa, the unique problem is our past.
Mm-hmm.
We are from a past where segregation was at the center.
Yeah.
And majority of the population were more trained to become labor suppliers to the economy.
How do you make sure, though, from a financial point of view, a monetary point of view, that there's enough financial assistance? Because you're quite right, there was a whole lovely big labor force there, but we need business to come through now. From the financial aspect, what are you doing for small business?
No, we have CIFA, which provide financial support to small businesses. The issue I was trying to raise right here is that without blaming the past, because we must talk about the future, is that you have a bigger community that must come into that must become entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And it can be like a flip of a coin that they become that. So there will be a need of intensified education program to make people aware, and I'm happy that government have taken an approach that we must introduce entrepreneurial education from an entry level up to our grade 12, which will help us to prepare these people. But in terms of making sure that people get funding, because that is key, CIFA comes into that space. Of course, there have been issues around how we offer people funding. We'll ask for guarantees to people who come from a village who doesn't have land of their own. Then you must move away from saying you must show a title deed if we are to help you.
But things are going to change very soon, because if land reform does come in, then people are going to need your help, because they will have land.
Absolutely. But you don't need to assist people because they have got access to land. You must assist the idea.
Right.
Because that is what you are funding. You are funding a business idea. You are not funding access to land. Because you can have access to land, but your idea doesn't make business sense. So you can't fund that. You must fund something that is workable, which is an idea. Our government must come on board to make sure that whoever knocks at the door with a brilliant idea, that person must get funding. And up to now, with the little materials for resources that we have, we are able to succeed because we do collaborate with IDC and your NEF, who have deeper pockets than we do.
I think you and I should have a working business lunch, actually. We need to discuss this for at least an hour.
I will appreciate that. I will appreciate that. And I appreciate the moment that you have given us to be with you.
Small Business Deputy Minister Cassel Motala, great to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I will take you up on that invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, let's stay with the story now and just having a look around you. So many small businesses have come up to me. In fact, I've got pamphlets. I've got a whole pile of them. I'll read out some of the names because I want to give you some support. There's nothing like being on 702. So, Yellow Green Cosmetics, you have a stand here, SSTT. You were telling me about your tires and the fact that they don't run flat. Then I had Stainless Steel from FJ, and he was telling me that he's going to sort out all the different biggest suppliers. I won't name the biggest suppliers because I think you've got a fight coming your way. It all comes down to brands, brand leadership as well. And Tebe Ikalafeng from Brand Leadership joins us now. And Tebe, great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, let's just get your mic sorted out. There you go. All right, talking about brands as well this afternoon. Smaller companies have big ideas, but are their brands being promoted enough?
Well, what they don't necessarily invest enough in the brands because they don't have the confidence to invest in the brand. What they require, actually, they require a bit of self-confidence to be able to think big while starting small. So, because you see, most of them, they think small and work small instead of saying to themselves, and I had a very good friend when I was in corporate, and he's a big successful businessman that runs his own brands. And he, when he was starting out, he had a business which was so small, didn't make sense. I went to his website. His website said, AIM International. I said, dude, how could you be AIM International? You only have like one or two little things that nobody's heard of. He says, those who come into my website don't know what I am, but it positions me as to where I want to be. And he says, that's how I need to think. He says, I may be here today, but I'm headed somewhere else, and I need to position myself, not from where I am, but with the destination that I'm headed.
But you can't lie. You're not lying.
Brands. I always tell people, brands are like religion.
Okay.
It is not necessarily that all of us are saved today, but we believe in something bigger and some of us are going to make it. So similarly with brands, it's not about lying. It's really about saying, where do I want to go when everything else works out well? Yeah. And then you need to begin the small steps in terms of what are the small steps that I need to take today? But it all starts with a simple clarity. Clarify your vision, be consistent, be congruent, and then take your brand out to the world.
Okay, so in other words, somebody comes in today to this expo. In fact, I was shooting a video earlier on. This shows the desperation. In the middle of the video, somebody cut in between me and the camera and said, have you seen my product? I really want to sell it. You see the desperation that is here.
So is it desperation or is it ambush marketing?
Well, it wasn't a live video, but it's going to be there. Just looking at it, how do you launch your brand then, apart from jumping into the video? What are the steps that you should take?
First things first is make sure that you package your brand well. Make sure that the quality proposition is consistent. Make sure that your brand delivers on what it promises. So you need to create a great promise, but the promise must be backed up by deliveries. That's the starting point. Because it doesn't help going out there marketing, promoting your brand when it isn't, when it doesn't perform, it doesn't deliver on what it says. That's the first step. Then second is then package it well. But when I talk about packaging brands, I always say to people, look at the brands that you admire, the brands that you'd like to be like, and benchmark yourself against them. Don't benchmark yourself against your pocket. Benchmark yourself against the brands that you are trying to take out of the business. Because you know what marketing and branding is all about? You're trying to take money from somebody else. Mm. That person is already, the people are listening to 702, you're starting a radio show or a radio station. Your brand of radio needs to not try and look small next to 702. I think it's Mandela who said there's nothing great about acting small. So you need to then say, what does 702 do well, which I need to work towards, because that's what I'm benchmarking myself
against. But is it not bullying going on behind the scenes? And I asked this question earlier. You'll have a big conglomerate here and the smaller guy next door, and in the public space, don't worry, we're helping you. It's all okay. We turn our backs to 702 in the public, and these guys get a bloody nose.
Of course, the big brands are in the battle as well. But guess what? If you are going to fight people in their territory and they've got better resources than you, you're obviously going to lose. So the key is to put on the table something that is different from what they are doing. And maybe they may all be selling bread or cold drink and all those, but what is so special about yours? Don't compete on Coca-Cola on cola drink, because they're going to clap you. You need to ask yourself, maybe I need to put salt in my Coca-Cola and offer them a different taste.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Put salt in Coca-Cola.
Well, I'm just saying.
I know, but they're sharing it at the moment.
They better not do that.
No, don't do that. Tebe Nkalafeng from Brand Leadership. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much
for coming to us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Really, really, really appreciate it.
And may the small brands of today become the great brands of tomorrow. Because, you know, in the survey that I do every year, Brand Africa 100, 80% of the brands that Africans admire are non-African. So it means we've got an 80% opportunity to be great and to build this continent.
Brand Africa. I just love that. The XG Show live from the proudly South African Buy Local Summit and Expo in Sandton this afternoon. Now, looking at some of your business news as well, the Rand not doing too badly today. Still hasn't gained back that ground it needs, though. Now, 14.27, that's to the dollar, 18.77 to the pound, and 16.08 to the euro. Brent crude oil still up there as well at the moment. So, sort of battling with Brent crude oil at the moment, $67.33, which is not good for our fuel prices. And then looking at the oil share, also battling a little bit, sort of flat today, but below that 56,000 mark now, 55,471 points. Banks doing better than yesterday, up 0.16% at the moment. Bit of a mixed bag at the moment, but the gold miners doing well, up 1.26%. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. My question to you, you heard from the Small Business Deputy Minister earlier on, saying they are doing a lot for small business in our country. I'd like to know from you, what have they done for you, if anything? And I'd like to hear some success stories as well. If they haven't, though, I'd like to hear about that. What has government's general approach been to you? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. 22 minutes to 1 o'clock, coming to you live from Sandton, the Sandton Convention Centre. Now, the clothing and textile industry has been a tough one for many years. And we're talking about small business, also big business as well, because the last thing you want is for a business to close. We've heard so many horrible stories lately of business rescue getting involved. Overseas markets have made sure that our own local industry battles to make a profit. Lately, retailers such as Cotton On, Mr. Price, they've felt the pressure. And every time I give those results in the afternoons with Joanne and with Bruce in the evenings, you get the sense that some of our retailers really are battling. Well, joining us from the Foschini Group, in charge of design and manufacturing at the Prestige, also Prestige Clothing Head, is Graham Choice. Hi, Graham. Welcome to 702.
Hi, Ray. Thanks you for having me on the show.
Right. I painted a bit of a gloomy picture there when it comes to the clothing industry. Is it as bad as that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a tough industry. I know that there are many employers out there that would disagree with me, but I do know that we've seen in our own local value chain how you can grow the local industry and how you can make the components and factories within your value chain sustainable.
All right, so looking at the Foschini Group, and I'm thinking about your results, reporting on them a couple of weeks ago. You guys, your share price actually went up on a very horrid day when I saw Mr. Price and others not being so lucky. What's your secret to your success then?
You know, our CEO and CFO in Sandton in Sun City at the moment, speaking to the investors, and I'm sure they're going to be able to answer that question far better than I can.
Right, we'll leave it there then. We'll take it to the high-end guys. Tell us a little bit more about Prestige Clothing. Now, I've got a package here at the moment. I'm going to ruffle it up next to the microphone. And inside, it's a blanket. Tell us more.
So Prestige Clothing started with 6 people in 1989. A couple of weeks ago, they turned 30 years old. We opened a new or secondary plant in a very small town about 2 hours outside of Cape Town called Caledon. The only claim to fame is the fact that they're one of the largest hubs of unemployed women in the area. And we started training up people from scratch, putting them on an NQF Level 2 National Qualification Framework 2 learnership, teaching them a skill, and then providing them with a really great machine. The blankets that you're seeing is part of their training program. So the first couple of weeks, we give them a lot of theory, and then we break the class into two parts, a theoretical component and a practical component. And then as we start bringing them into the factory slowly to acclimatize them, we allow them every Friday to come in and stitch blankets. And then when the learnership is over, where they're no longer a student after about 11 months, they're part of the family, they're part of the community.
So you actually keep them, because that's the big criticism by many, is that you train up, you provide the skills, but then there's no job.
Our training programs run about 120 new learners every single year, and our retention is over 80%.
Wow.
And they're all employed.
That's really good.
So Caledon has grown from 6 people in 2008, and there's 420 in the plant at the moment.
Sure. That's really good. That's quite something. At some point, though, you're going to have to put a lid on it as well. Do you have any other, maybe, programs that you will be starting? Because this can't carry on forever, or can it?
Well, it's not just Prestige Clothing, Maitland and Caledon that make up the value chain for TFG. I mean, couple of years ago, we were producing three million garments for the group. Today, we manufacture 9 million garments. And the distinction between the two numbers is, of the 3 million garments, very small amount was on a quick response process by which you could actually affect in-demand product that retail would want. Of the 9 million garments we currently produce, 62% are done just in time. It's done within a quick response timeline of less than 56 days from concept to design. So whatever's selling, Ray, we can replicate. And that 62% is going to grow in the future. And if you're looking at our share price, you'll see that as we scale up from 9 million to 18 million to 27 million garments, you're also going to see that percentage of quick response capability increase with that. And so being able to address what is selling right now and being able to answer your customers with that product is a huge advantage.
Talking about job creation, I mean, it's a very difficult thing at the moment. I've got an SMS here saying it's not just about jobs, or maybe jobs bleeding into the fashion industry as well. How big is our fashion industry in this country? I mean, the Fashini Group is right up there.
So, I mean, we've got thousands of young designers, wonderful designers, homegrown designers. But the fashion industry has got a tail, it's got a value chain. So it's about design and manufacturing, how to take those single beautiful garments and convert them into multiples quickly, and quick enough to be able to catch that fashion trend, catch that sizzle that's happening right now. If you are a standard buyer in a company internationally, you're going to be making purchasing decisions in February for August. Oh, that's a big ask. You're going to be making a lot of mistakes. They're going to teach you to buy as cheap as you can, sell for the most you can to allow for a big fat markdown when you don't get it right. But if you're making those purchasing decisions right at the end, if you're making those purchasing decisions in July for what you want to put into store in August, you're going to win. And that means that local is lacquer. That means local is going to grow, because you can't have quick response internationally. Many have tried. They're still working on it. I don't see it yet. I see quick response happening in our country, in our towns. We have factories in some of the most obscure places in South Africa. Wonderful factories. Factories that started with 50 people that are now over 300.
That sounds good. Okay, final question then. Those people you spoke about internationally, are they buying South African? In other words, we are proudly South African. We're buying local. Are they coming into our country, or are we still looking at the Big Apple, New York City?
Gee. Ray, it's a question that I would like to answer in a different way. Unfortunately, the only way to say is yes, we still rely heavily on overseas fashion. We still rely on what other people are doing in their countries and then bringing it into our country. But I think as the value chain gets empowered, you spoke to the Minister of Small Business, as that value chain starts empowering itself, becoming more efficient, our own retailers are going to find the sexiness about our product, and you're going to find that international customers are going to find our products on their shelves rather than their products on our shelves.
Yeah, all about finding our sexiness. It's there. Just, guys, open your eyes, that's all.
Yes.
Graham Choice, Head of Prestige Clothing at the Fashini Group. Great to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
And good luck for the summit.
Thank you.
Exactly 12:45 at the moment. Coming to you live from the proudly South African summit meeting at the Sandton Convention Center. Come on down here if you are thinking about starting your own business. It's easy. Just come on down here. They'll give you some help. Lots of small businesses running around at the moment. Let's do some international news now. It also affects us as well. There's been general shock following the Ethiopian plane crash that left 157 people dead at the weekend. Now, the plane crashed near the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. There has been varied reaction to what happened, with some, including our own Comair, grounding its Boeing 737 MAX 8 planes. However, the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration has declined to order airlines to ground their MAX 8. So there seems to be a little bit of problem with this. On the line is somebody you would know from, I think, of Mango Airlines many years ago, aviation consultant Hein Kaiser. Hein, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ray. Sure, you make me sound quite old, eh?
It's been a few years, Hein, it has, I tell you. Now, listen, for an airline to ground some of its planes, I mean, this could be financially devastating. Are airlines insured against this? It looks like the United States, they're a little bit reluctant.
You know, I think certainly in the case of South Africa and many other airlines, it has been a voluntary grounding at this time. And it is done, I suppose, from one perspective, from a reputational perspective, and to ensure that there's consumer confidence after a very tragic event like that. So from a reputational point of view, I think it's a very good thing until the aircraft gets the all clear. But from a commercial perspective, the picture might not be that rosy. If you think about the cost of ownership, cost of operation, and the potential revenue loss that you have if you don't have fleet to replace it, where you potentially have to either condense your schedule, certainly cancel flights, there's a very real commercial, opportunity cost to this. And over and above that, aviation is not all bells and whistles and printing money. The margins are extremely tight. So it definitely comes with very substantial financial implications.
Yeah. Okay, you were at Mango not so long ago. I'm just joking with you, I promise. When it comes to insurance, I mean, are you guys insured against stuff like this?
One can insure against many things, but you can't really insure against the loss of revenue when you voluntarily ground your fleet. So it is a loss that you have to take. Insurance is normally about the airframe, your engines, passenger insurance, insuring against losses in that instance. But you can't really insure against a commercial loss like that. So it really is something you have to take that hit.
You would know this. I mean, would the flight recorder have given an accurate picture of what happens? I mean, could they take that data and say, right, the Boeing 737 is a problem?
That's very difficult to speculate on that because you don't know what the condition of the flight recorder is or even if they've recovered it in one piece. So I think that's something that the investigators would over time be able to tell. It would be impossible to speculate about that.
Reports say the plane, and I was listening to Eyewitness News this morning, reports saying the plane flying awkwardly through the sky. The pitch was fluctuating. How regular are checks carried out?
Aviation has an unbelievably strict maintenance regime. There are various different checks. Before any aircraft is dispatched, it is also a double check for any faults or errors. So the regime is intense. And safety is always the number one priority for absolutely every airline. Notwithstanding, having said that, things can go wrong, but it is quite rare.
Yeah. The U.S. declining to ground flights for now. China, they've got their no-nonsense approach. They basically said last night, so something like this happens, it's game over for you for a while. Is the U.S. wrong in what they are saying, or is it just because they just don't know?
At this time, it might be very early to tell, Ray. You know, when something tragic like this happens, everybody looks for answers. And the lowest, or I suppose the quickest common denominator would be to, in some instances, ground the fleet. Or in others, look for the facts or try and see why this happened or make assumptions without, I suppose, scaring the entire universe. So it would just be a different approach that everybody takes in terms of how they want to deal with it. You know, it's one incident, I suppose, from a very cold perspective, hurts the entire industry and confidence in the industry. It is a very sad thing that impacts everyone because aviation is like one giant family.
Yeah. All right, let's leave it there, I'm afraid. Aviation consultant Hein Kaiser, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us all the way from Johannesburg. 8 minutes to 1 o'clock, the XG show coming to you live from the Sandton Convention Center for the proudly South African Buy Local Summit and Expo as well. What we thought we would do in the next eight or the last 8 minutes of the show is promote small business. Now, we've been walking around the Expo Center here, and there's all sorts of people with their things on display. But I must admit, something that caught my eye was the sweetie shop, the Darling Sweets. And joining us from Darling Sweets is Sam van Vuren. Hi, Sam.
Hi there.
Right, tell us more about Darling Sweets, or Darling Sweet, as your card says.
So, yes, Darling Sweet is a range of traditional toffees manufactured in the old-fashioned way in the small town of Darling in the Western Cape.
All right, so tell us more about your sweets, because I'm thinking Peter Dirk Ace, because he comes from Darling. Does he enjoy your sweets as well?
He absolutely does. One of our flavors is actually named after him, Tanya Vita's Classic.
Okay.
And some of the proceeds of the sale of that product actually go towards the Darling Trust.
Oh, I like that. Now, hold on. Does he chew toffee? Because I know that Tanya Vita's got false teeth. So how does that work?
Well, they're meant to be enjoyed with time. So, yes, he does enjoy... Once they're popped in the mouth, they have to be savored and enjoyed.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good marketing. Tell us more about Darling Sweet. I mean, how did you guys start out?
So Darling Sweet was started in 2013 by Henty van der Merwe and Fritz van Reineveld. And they literally started small with one toffee pot. And today we have, there's 10 flavors in our traditional range and a range of soft caramels. And literally also employ upskilled local Darling residents to now we have a stock complement of 25.
Very nice, very nice. How do you promote yourself? I mean, I'm thinking Omar Rusks, because they're in the Karoo somewhere. I keep reading the box all the time. You guys are in the Western Cape. I've been through Darling. It's lovely, because I haven't seen your sweet factory, but I have seen Peter Dirk Ace's whole get up that he's got there, his big theatre. How do you guys put yourself on the map?
So Darling Sweet do attend a lot of expos, for example, the Proudly South African. They're also involved in something called Karma's Pork Geskenke. It's a national market. I think there's five across the country. And we do have representation in a lot of independent stores. We have an online presence, social media, and obviously always looking for opportunities. We've just recently launched a guest turndown range. So we're looking for opportunities to get into nice hotel groups.
All right. So that's your marketing. Now your distribution. Of course, you have these lovely toffees and the chocolate number one that you had over there as well that we tasted earlier. How do you then distribute?
So all the orders are actually supplied out of the factory in Darling. So we're still a very small company, but we do courier nationally.
Okay, that's all right. SMS, yeah, don't your sweets go off? Incurring.
No, they don't. They've got a shelf life of a year.
Good grief, that's an interesting SMS. Shelf life of a year.
Yes.
Okay.
And we are proudly South African, but we also are kosher, we're halal, and we don't have any preservatives in our products.
Okay. When starting out your own business, I mean, what advice do you have? A lot of budding entrepreneurs are hearing this interview and they're thinking to themselves, fine, sure enough, I've got a product as well. How do you do that?
I think one has to realize that you have to start somewhere and grow with that. You know, you look at these big brands and you think, gosh, how did they get there? But everybody starts somewhere, and to keep the passion alive and to work with the owners of Darling Sweet, who are so passionate about their product. It truly is an amazing brand to be involved in.
And then, of course, the business finance, which is the big thing, because it's lovely having Darling Sweet. And then you start out small and you kind of sell to your neighbors as it gets bigger and bigger. At some point, did you have to turn around and say, right, we need to speak to the Small Business Development Corporation. We need to speak to the Small Business Department about getting that finance in, because if you don't do that, you're going to be in trouble.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, I haven't been that involved in the financial side of things, but I do know that various conversations have been held with the likes of CEDA, and yes, Darling Sweet have had help in terms of on that side of things.
Yeah. Plans for the future? And more flavors, by the way. I tasted some of your flavors. In fact, I see your producers have disappeared. I think they're at your sweet store at the moment.
Yes, I mean, we've just launched the 10th flavor. So it's ongoing. I think, you know, it's how far can we go? I think we can. Henty van der Merwe is very, he's an amazing person, and he's always in the development. Watch the space.
Where is Henty van der Merwe today?
So Henty van der Merwe is based in the factory in Darling. So right. No doubt he's overlooking the orders and making sure that things happen.
So he's listening to this interview at the moment.
Hopefully.
Absolutely great. Sam van Vuren, great to have you from Darling Sweet, and best of luck.
Thank you so much.
I'll be coming to your store after the show. Thank
awesome,
you very much.
Do.
That's Sam van Vuren. Give us a call, 011-883-0702, in case you'd like to maybe promote your business. I did put it out there a little bit earlier on. The Small Business ministry? What have they done for you? I'd like to hear from you. I've got one or two SMSs at the moment, not very complimentary at all. Robert Escott, he says, at Ray White SA, the small business ministry, one of the most useless ministries in South Africa. Then Rafilwe Nicholas Rantau says, very useless department there, Ray. Nothing they do for those small businesses they held the positions for. And the criticism goes on and goes on. So I think in a way that we have to actually get the former Premier back on the show. He's now the Deputy Minister of Small Business. Time for one more. And Pandile, hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What is Siko Republic? I love promoting small business. Tell us all about yourselves.
Okay, so Siko Republic is a proudly South African brand. It's an athleisure wear brand. We make proudly SA active wear. And our designs and our brand is centered around African women, and it's centered around African print, as you can see from what I'm wearing. Mm. Our designs are inspired by the African print, and also they're specifically designed for the African woman. And all our brand is saying is that, you know, we're encouraging our people to, you know, to live a healthy lifestyle, and while doing the hair, to help living that healthy lifestyle, wearing clothes that represent who they are and that they can identify with. Because now everyone is like, the future is African, and even people overseas, even people in international companies, they want to be, you know, part of Africa. So we just decided, let's just do our own brand.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good then. Just listening to what you're saying, are we doing enough to promote proudly South African African wear?
No, I feel like more could be done. But with instances like we hear today, you know, it's a beginning. But I do feel that more could be done to, you know, especially in the textile environment, to promote proudly South African items. Nowadays, like, you find that a person is just promoting on their own, you know, you're doing your own thing, you're promoting it on social media, on your online. There's no assistance from anyone, which is, for me, I think it's a bit unfair because it is such a huge industry. More could definitely be done, but we are grateful for the opportunity that we're having today, which is also, which is an indication that something is being done.
Right, you've got a couple of 100,000 people listening to you at the moment. What's your website address?
Our website address is www.sigorepublic with a K at the end. And we are on all social media platforms. We're on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. So if anyone wants to check us out, they're more than welcome to go into our site. You'll find all our athleisure wear. It's fun. It's an exciting brand. And it's innovative. And it's very cute.
And you're also Pandile Mahlangu from Siko Republic. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And best of luck.
Thank you.
Wrapping up the XG show, coming to you live from the Sandton Convention Centre for the Proudly South African Buy Local Summit and the Expo. And lots of excitement here this afternoon, as you can hear. It's just gone 1 o'clock.